So we've got with us today a number of people from The Signal. We have Matthew and Miranda and myself, Nick Edwards. And we've also got a team from QMX and from Sparkplug Games who are developing the Firefly Online video game. So I'm just going to like to ask them to introduce themselves. Andy, you start.
Oh, I'm Andy Gore, and I'm the executive producer of Firefly Online.
I'm Adam Kogan, and I'm the design director on Firefly Online.
And Ben? I'm Ben Licious. I am the art director for Firefly Online.
Now, what should we talk about?
Well, you're talking to a group of people who are designing the world's most ridiculous looking spaceships right now because we can't.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
I just saw a design that absolutely blew my socks off from the Ben's design team for a mining ship that can be converted to a transport, and the thing looks like a freaking flying sand crawler. It's the most awesome thing ever.
It's beautifully coaster. Clunky.
Well, you guys have the control stick. Tell us what you'd like to do.
That's cool. I'll just fly around the verse on my fabulous new app.
Yeah, by the way, Matthew, I will tell you, we had a development meeting right before this, and I told the guys about your little email to me. And I know it made all of us smile hugely because, you know, we're now 18 months into this project, and, you know, these guys sweat blood every day on this thing, and we get very, very little user feedback except for, where's my Kepler? So getting one note from somebody even just saying, it's awesome, just made our day. So thank you.
Excellent. That's good to know.
Thank you.
It did crash on me once, but there we go.
Oh, it's user error, right? Oh. Right, Ben?
Of course.
Yeah, maybe. Yes. Something to do with the videos in the news section. A little fit over that.
Oh, did it crash when it went outside the app to the Marina video? Is that what happened?
It wasn't the Marina video.
I've never managed to get the Marina video to play the whole way through.
Well, Nick, you'll be happy to know that our film editor is working on about 13 other BDH videos that you won't be able to watch either.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we have many other interviews coming.
Yeah, that's good.
And so far my favorite one, this will surprise you, is Sean Maher's video.
All right.
Really?
Yeah, because he did something. He was really into the video, like into the interview, and he did something with the video that was so freaking hilarious. And at the time when we were shooting it, the producer who was shooting the video kind of said, I don't know if that comes across as creepy or not. And maybe in person it does a teeny bit, but on the video it was hilarious. He actually pulls out a picture of Jewel and starts having a conversation with her.
I mean, the pair of them, if you see them on a panel, the pair of them just the on-screen chemistry is real. They get on really, really well, and they both tell lots of stories about the show, and they're both very entertaining people.
Well, it's a very funny thing about playing the part of Simon. You know, he doesn't get a lot of opportunities in the show or the movie to really show his acting chops, but I'll tell you, he practically got an Oscar for this video. He did for it's so great. Yeah, you know, I mean, you really got the sense that he was genuinely communicating with Jewel with the photograph. It was very interesting. It was awesome. It's actually the best one so far. Although I haven't seen the Adam Nathan video yet. So I imagine that one's full of hilarious hijinks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Adam also is very entertaining in person.
Yeah, my favorite thing is when occasionally someone will post a note up on the Facebook page and say, "Is Adam Baldwin in this?" To which I know. To which
no.
I. It's
everyone except Adam.
Like, yeah. It's like when the guy knocks on your front door and you open it up, and they're holding an official looking envelope and they say, "Are you Nick?" And
yeah.
You go, "Why no?
My name is Gertrude."
I see a lot of people being confused about Alan Tudyk being in the story, and just to set the record straight, the game takes place just after the show ends. Not quite to where Serenity the movie takes place. So
it's a Firefly character,
is alive.
After all, isn't it?
Between Firefly and Serenity, yes.
Almost everybody else, we want the full cast, so we have.
Well,
to,
of course.
I always like to think of that.
To be alive for
yeah. How long is the gap between the movie and the series again? It's like a year, right? Something like that.
8 months. Sorry,
yeah. It's about 8 months.
Yeah, that's the world's busiest 8 months ever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, between the role playing game, comic book, and now the video game. It's like, you know, it seems unlikely in the game. You know, assuming we come out and the game is a big success, it seems less than likely we'll want to go into the future because it was so much fun working with all the actors, and Alan was a real standout. We already had a conversation with Alan about doing an adventure about his flight school days, principally so he could have his mustache back.
Oh, great.
I actually just had a discussion with Ben about making sure that everyone can equip a mustache like his.
Awesome. Then you could do Movember, for example. That'd be great. Yeah.
Right.
Well, actually, Ben, if you have a version of the high-res Alan model with the mustache, send it along because I'll send it to him along with his package. Because that'll get him to approve it right there. I mean, he won't even care what it looks like.
Yeah, I'll just grab it right off out of the show and paste it on there.
There you go, cool.
Talking of Alan, and we're talking sort of between the way the story is actually set. Talking about story, then. I know Alan is not just playing Wash, for example. Can you throw any light on that without spoilers? Or
well, I can confirm that that's true.
Okay.
I don't know, Adam, as the story's author, what do you feel comfortable revealing?
I think we could say that his character is not very nice.
He does baddies very well, actually, Alan.
He does. He's terrific.
And,
a little scary.
Yeah. So, Adam, you've written the story for Firefly Online. We know it's set between the end of the Firefly series and the Serenity movie. And we know Alan is playing himself as Wash, because Wash has not yet met that fictional end that we don't talk about, and that he's actually playing other characters within the game. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, he also reprised his role as Wash, and he and the other members of Serenity also figure into the story. They kind of come in and out of the story several times throughout the game. The game has a central storyline, but there are also a lot of side stories that you can pursue at your own pace.
Almost like mini adventures or missions.
There are lots of side jobs. I mean, if you'd rather just do those, you don't have to experience the main storyline at all, you know, up to a certain point.
Although it would be a shame to do that because the main story
is
pretty awesome.
Yeah, and Andy's invested a lot of currency in the main story with all these actors coming back and reprising their roles.
Well,
it would be a shame to miss that, but We want freedom in the game.
I can tell you from a story perspective that the first condition of getting, you know, Nathan and Adam and Jewel and Morena and Alan and everybody back to reprise their roles is they all got script reads, and they wouldn't have come if they didn't like what they read. And in fact, in the Morena video and in Summer's video and a few of the other interviews that we did, they actually on camera talk about how much they really liked the story. So, and I do think it's a really good story. It explores a part of the Versus history that's pretty significant and is also got a connection to Mal's personal history. It fills in a blank, we think, in a pretty colorful way. And what it does is it allows the player to play an integral role in sort of discovering this dark secret. And Alan does play two parts. He does, of course, play Wash. And he also plays a new character who, while doesn't have a ton of lines, is the prime motivator of the story. And the only thing I'll say two things about the character. The character's name is Siever, and he is almost the anti-Wash.
Right.
Okay. You know, he is everything that Wash isn't, and is nothing that Wash is. Yeah, he's definitely not marriage material, let's put it that way. I think Zoe would much more likely break him in half. Give him a second look. But it's a really fascinating character, very, very interesting. Actually, one of the more colorful new characters that Adam came up with. and he's really important. And Alan does an amazing job. I don't think of giving away too much by saying this character is very creepy.
We know Alan can do that.
Yes, he can. Yes, he can. When we were in the studio and he recorded the part, and we did it, you know, working with our wonderful voice director Andrea Romano, you know, we went through a few passes to try to get to dial in the character. And he dialed in really very quickly. I mean, you understand when you work with these people why they are the amazing professionals they are. He dialed in the character pretty quick, and the funny thing was once he had the character, everybody who was in the studio, watching the recording, I mean, everybody had their mouths wide open. I'm sure half a dozen, a family of flies must have moved into my mouth. It was incredible. You don't hear a drop of Alan in the part. It's just amazing.
I mean, getting the whole cast together and having the whole cast be happy with, like as you say, the reading through the script and being happy with the parts and you know, not being willing to do this unless the story was good. That's a fairly sound recommendation, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think Adam and I were both very nervous when the scripts went out for reads.
That I can understand.
Yeah, but you know, it seems like everyone is really happy to be returning to their roles. It's just like,
yeah.
Revisiting old friends, and
I don't think that really, I'm not sure that really surprises anyone, because they've always said, all other things being equal, the stars align. I've never heard any one of them say, no, we've moved on, I'm never going back to that, I don't want to do Firefly again. They've never said that, ever. So this is a golden opportunity.
Yeah, the only person that, unfortunately, looks like we're not going to get back in time for at least the first release of the game, is Gina, and her folks made it very clear that it was a scheduling issue. Mm-hmm. She has a lot going on right now. And so we were really hoping, and we've been pushing the production schedule out further and further, and there's still a small window left where we might be able to get her in, but it's just not looking good. And, but everybody else, and in some cases, you know, Jewel, like Gina, is up in Canada pretty much full-time right now, on various gigs, and, you know, Jewel actually went to the trouble to drive to another city to go to another sound studio so that we could do a remote with her for her part. You know, Morena was in the studio twice, or she's about to come in the studio a second time, and she's trying to squeeze this in between going to New York to do Gotham, and also, you know, she just had a baby a year ago. So,
yeah.
You know, these folks are not being, they're making an effort. I mean, they're really making a clear effort to be there. And to do this, it's important to them.
Well, it's important to us as well. I mean, I think the fans will respond to that. I mean, massive news when you were able to announce it. I can't see anyone who would not want to explore the whole story, because there's, you know, there's Mal and there's Adam and Jane and all the characters there, and other characters, of course, that you want to find out more about the verse.
I was going to say, as someone who doesn't play those games, I'm the one that I'm probably your target audience. I'm a television watcher that doesn't do online games. Like, I'm the odd geek, whereas I don't do games at all. So for me to want to be on it, obviously it's my love of Firefly and the love of those actors that's going to bring me in.
I think Adam can speak to that point very well. Adam is also the head of game design. It's unusual for the head of game design to also be the head writer, but in this case it was really important, because we realized that this is a game that is going to appeal to a lot of non-gamers, and we had to make sure that it worked for them as well.
Yes, in terms of game systems as well, we're hoping that we're going to be providing you with a lot of things that you can do as a non-gamer in the game. You know, that if there's some of the things like combat are seem a little bit unapproachable, there'll be other things for you to do, like create your own jobs or just trade stuff. Fill your cargo hold and fly to another planet and unload and make money.
Or fly around the verse and explore it.
Just explore.
Land on planets. Go. Well, if you're a big damn hero, you can go visit the crappy town where you're a hero.
There's going to be a lot of crappy towns, aren't there?
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a huge percentage
of crappy towns.
Well, there'll be a lot of crappy towns. They aren't all necessarily going to be visible in every instance. And also keep in mind, you know, there are 200-plus terraformed planets and moons, and every planet and moon is going to have, you know, hundreds of towns and villages and cities. And there's a lot of verse out there to explore.
Yeah.
So
That's always been one of the attractions of the verse, is that there's so much implied on screen and in the comics that it's only the canon material, if you like, has only scratched the smallest part of the surface of it, and we know this. So that's one of the reasons people like it, because there's so much depth implied there, and to be able to explore more of that, I think, is something that will really interest people, even if they're not gamers.
A huge opportunity to fill in some of those details.
I don't want to stay on just the actors coming back, because if that's all we've achieved with the game, then we haven't done our jobs. And I think this game was always designed to function without these things. And so the game really does stand on its own 2 feet. But one other thing, just because I think it's sort of, it goes to what you just said about the vastness of the verse. When we had Marina in for her first session for the main story, she actually was the one who made a plea that we do another story just for her and Nathan. And she said, you guys need to come up with a script for just me and Nathan, because the fans will love and will love doing it. And so Adam actually went out and we created our first, we're already mostly done with our first DLC module that'll come out after the game comes out. And it'll be a special extended adventure just with, you know, principally involving Inara and Mal.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And, you know, and everybody, almost without exception, everybody came to the studio had ideas for stories.
That's
Adam
cool.
had a whole idea for a story. Alan had ideas for stories.
Let's carry on. Alan is taking multiple roles. Has any of the other crew got an evil alter ego or another character?
Evil twin.
Actually, Adam Baldwin did play another character, but it's a minor role.
Right. And, of course, you've got some other fan favorites from the wider genre.
Michael Dorn's in it.
Worf in the
Birth. We have Michael Fairman.
Michael Dorn plays a very important character as well. He's a...
His title's Commander, yeah.
Commander, okay. He's the commander of one of those big city ships you see in the series.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, who ends up being ends up having a bit of a bone to pick with the player at a certain point in the story.
Almost immediately, excellent. Really.
Yeah, almost immediately.
I always saw those big ships as a sort of satirical take on the Star Trek, you know, Galaxy class ships as well. So
that was a point not lost in our casting director.
Excellent.
So there are lots of cruisers. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, I am interested in the gameplay, and I'm really curious about. I'm rather hoping that we can persuade Miranda to be an admiral of a fleet of pirates, and that we can go around the verse. robbing everybody blind and blowing up ships and doing all sorts of things. How much opportunity is there for cooperation in the game?
Cooperation in terms of lots of players
between
working
players,
together.
I guess.
Well, the game is primarily a single player experience, so mostly you'll be controlling your own crew and making decisions based on what you want to do. But there are a lot of opportunities to share things with other players. The job system is one way that you will be sharing things with people.
Right. So it isn't so much that you can get three players' crews all ganging up on one
one
raid like you might do in World of Warcraft, but you can kind of do the trading side and the swapping missions sort of thing.
Yeah, not this iteration, but you know. If this game does really well, we would love to do more and more.
That's good. I'm always too slow. Yeah. You know, multiple players don't enjoy having me on the team. I'm an old man. I'm not of the digital native generation, so I can't keep up with the younger players. So that's good. I don't mind working on my own.
And a lot of the game is designed really to be played at your own pace. There's not a lot of Twitch gameplay. And I think that we are going to end up having a lot of players from more mature generations who this might be the first game they've played in a very long time. And we're hoping that it'll be very approachable to them, while at the same time giving a lot of combat and RPG options that more hardcore players will enjoy.
Yeah, that's probably me, actually. I mean, I've played games before. I've done RPGs before, but I haven't really delved into the online games. There's one or two, but they've not been kind of first-person combat type scenarios. So I'm quite interested to see how this will actually, how the game experience will work out. I mean, you say that the way you can do it at your own pace, I think, is going to be very appealing for a lot of people.
Yeah, we hope so. And combat will be turn-based, and there are options to flee. If you
run away.
If you end up in combat and that's not what you want to do, then you can escape.
Okay.
Potentially right. Unharmed.
That's always a good idea.
Yeah, run away.
Well, part, one of the fundamental questions we've been asked is, you know, why did we make the game design choices that we made? And, you know, everything we did was very intentional. A lot of it really just has to do with what we viewed as the personality of the show. You know, I mean, Joss wrote an action show, but he didn't write a dumb action show. He wrote a smart action show where often it's what's more interesting is how people figure out how to avoid fights or get around fights or end fights quickly, rather than the details of a firefight. And, yeah, sure, we have our firefights, but we also kick Crow into the engine to end the debate. And the game needed to reflect that, and that's part of the reason why we decided to go with a turn-based strategy game for combat, because we felt that opened up more. Not only is that a mode of play that more people who are not gamers will feel comfortable with, because they're not required to do something with instantaneous, you know, reflexes, but because it also encourages people to think and be strategic, and it gives them the opportunities to, you know, to move out of situations or avoid situations.
Right, and it also lends itself very well to including the whole crew in combat.
Exactly,
it makes that manageable, so you can control every character in one combat scenario.
So yeah. Miranda, as our kind of non-gamer, I mean, does that aspect of it appeal to you, appeal to the your wish to play the game itself, not just for the actors being there and the stories, but for the actual experience of gameplay itself?
As far as the battle scenarios are concerned, you mean?
Yeah.
For me, playing a game would be all about furthering the story with each action that I do. So, you know, if I have to fight the battle in order to get to the next part of the story, then that would be the thing that would drive me.
Yeah, that does happen a few times in the main storyline. And, you know, the verse is not a safe place. Sometimes you don't get to choose whether you're going to be in combat or not. But a lot of times you do. A lot of times you can talk your way out of combat. You can also talk your way into combat.
You can totally pick a fight. That's
yeah, if you're, you can play the way that you want to. If you're feeling a little roguish,
find yourself in an alliance-friendly bar on U Day, and
right, yeah,
and you can absolutely pick a fight. Yep, that's not an issue at all.
You know, you can take a job that has you delivering cows somewhere, and when you arrive, you can honor your agreement, or maybe not.
But do you get to wear a pretty floral bonnet? That's the question.
And yeah, that's another question we got asked recently. We were showing some of the 3D models of because you're really going to have. You're going to have a lot of control over the look of your character. And, you know, not only are we designing clothes, I mean, Ben can talk more about this, but not only are we designing clothes, you know, based on things people might actually wear if they were living in a frontier environment, but we're also letting you kind of mix and match things. We're not gender locking anything. We don't have to, you know, just because of, you know, 3D model requirements. There's a level of richness in the game that we felt was very important, because if you think about how unbelievably rich and thought out and fully conceived the verse was for 14 episodes, you know, the game's got to reflect that. That's really important. And actually, the person who's principally responsible for that is Ben. Ben, do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the thought that's gone into the design of the environments, the costumes, the characters?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for as much as there is established, we've also talked about how wide open everything is, and that's really one of the things that we're trying to do, I think, for players as they come in, is to be able to create their own space in this world that we've all, you know, been following for so long and know so much about. And so a lot of that requires, I think, of us as developers to give players a certain level of customization as they begin to play. So like Andy was talking about, we're trying to make sure that you can customize your characters, the look of them, the size of them, you know, just about every component that we can that fits within the scope of what we're doing, but outfits, the kind of weapons you're carrying, and that really kind of expands out into other areas too. We're trying to create a system for customizing your ship as well, and that's another thing that we're working on. So as you expand and buy new ships, you'll be able to add on to them, customize them, the interiors, the living space that you provide for your crew, customizing the members of your crew as you go along as well. Adam and I are working right now through some of the crafting elements that we want to put in the game to allow you to customize some of those individual things even a little bit further, and maybe those have an impact on the way that you play the game too. So we're really just trying to create a way for you to play this game and really make it your own.
That's really good to hear. Down the line, you talk about customizing your ship. Now, I always felt that this was a crew that they professed that they wanted to fly around the verse and always be free and never settle. But, you know, I always wondered whether actually some of them did just want to be plain old farmers. Is it going to be an opportunity, maybe some DLC down the line, to trade in your ship for a plot of land somewhere on Three Hills or something?
I think the only not having a ship.
Yeah, I think the only way we would do that is if the Alliance came along and burned your place to the ground and, you know, raped your cattle and so forth. I think there's not a whole lot to play if all you're doing. We're not going to do Farmville. Somebody already did that.
Yeah. That's right.
However, having said that, there's a lot of stuff you can do on your ship. You know, it isn't just a matter of walking around and it looks really pretty, and it will look really pretty and cool, and, you know, your ship will be your ship, but, you know, you'll be able to decorate it, you'll be able to assign, as your crew gets bigger, you'll be able to assign them to posts in the ship to help the ship operate more efficiently, to help you deal more effectively when you get boarded, and you will get boarded. As Adam said, we're trying to create an open system that lets you play the way you want to play. Very, very early in game development, our marketing manager, who has been, you know, involved in watching the game develop, she got really excited when she found out she could decorate her ship, because as far as she's concerned, what she wants is Firefly Space Sims.
Right.
And she doesn't care about anything else. She just wants to get cool stuff, add support, make enough money from her trades that she can just, you know, buy the bonsai tree she saw on that trading post, and the oriental rug she saw, you know, in Persephone, and that's how she wants to play the game.
And that really is an aspect of the game.
And we want to make that okay, you know? There's no reason why I should force you to go and shoot people just because, you know, that's the way we would play the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. Flying the ship around isn't just a means to an end. You know, while you're flying the ship, and you can fly it in real time, you can pick a direction and fly in that direction, but things are happening inside your ship. There are people inside your ship, and you can go into the ship and see what they're doing. You know, so there is that Sims aspect happening all the time.
Cool. Can you distill illegal alcohol in the engine?
you know, that actually touches on our crafting system a little bit, but that's about as far as I want to
talk about. So I'm totally leaving that. I'm going to totally leave that to Adam, because I'll admit the crafting system is a little over my head.
Yeah, it's a little early on to talk about that, but I think that's within the realms of possibility. Yeah,
it requires a lot of testing.
Yeah, because the guarantee is, when you have, you know, have 100,000 people playing your game, they will find every possible way to combine things in ways that you hadn't anticipated. So,
cool.
But there is definitely a goal to have a crafting system.
Coming back to more mundane matters in terms of gameplay, would you say this is a freemium game, or will be a freemium game when it comes out?
No,
it is not a freemium game from day one. Actually, there's two things that we've consistently been trying to convince people of that we've had a little bit of a challenge with. And I'd love to address both of those with you guys right now. One of them is, people are always asking us if it's a freemium game. It's never been a freemium game. From day one, our plan was always to charge you a fair sum of money for the game. And you can expect this to be priced, you know, around the same level of other, you know, indie games in the category. I mean, we're going to we're going to price fairly. This has got to be accessible. This is not, you know, we don't hate, you know, there are good freemium games and there are bad freemium games. In my book, the bad freemium games are the ones that require you pay money in order to advance in the game. That, to me, is really evil and bad. The freemium games who give you the option of spending money in order to enrich the game experience, but it is not required in order to play and execute the game and have a good time, those are good freemium games. And so I do think that there are both. But the gameplay has to fit that model. It has to make sense. The worst thing that you can do in the world as a game designer is take a gameplay approach that is decidedly not good for freemium and try to make it freemium. And, you know, there I won't mention names, but there are lots of good examples of, you know, games that were premium games that the publishers tried to make them freemium and they ruined them. And so we understand what the experience is the fans want, and that's what we're creating. And we know they don't want to have a parking meter in the game, and that's, so that's not going to happen. Now, having said that, it costs money to develop games. It costs money to maintain them. It costs money to come up with new content. So as we come up, so our plan is, you know, once the game gets off the ground, gets out there and people are using it and hopefully are happy with it, you know, we will create new content that they can pay for and buy and install in the game. But it will not, it will be an extension to the existing game, not a way to access the existing game. Do you understand the difference, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I do. I mean, in terms of the good games that I enjoy, my kids have played the Simpsons game, for example, for years without ever spending a penny. And okay, you know, there's some things that they miss out on that they could have bought, but they don't actually miss out on building the town of Springfield. And you
know, my wife got the Frozen level 150 without ever spending a penny.
Yeah.
You know, I'll admit she's far more dogged in her pursuit of that than I ever would be. But, you know, that's the sign of a good freemium game. And good freemium games don't require you to pay money in order to play them, win at them, you know, and be a great player.
Yeah. Well, that's good
this
hear.
Is not, but this is not a freemium game. Like I said, you know, when there is additional content, you know, like, for example, there's this new adventure that we're designing right now. You know, we'll charge you some money for that, but I don't think that's any different than buying a role playing game and buying a new adventure module. So
no,
that's
not at all.
It's not a subscription model either. You pay once and you can play through the whole game, and sometime later we'll release expansion content and
you can
pay for that as well.
The other thing that I think is worth mentioning is, you know, we were talking about, you know, how much interaction is there between players, and it is definitely not World of Warcraft. That is not what we were trying to do, and that's not what we've created. And I think, honestly, for this game, that's a good thing. But, you know, that's not to say that there aren't lots of, you know, there are lots of ways in which your gameplay will affect other people's gameplay. Adam, did you talk at all about the idea of the revenge mission?
No, I didn't.
No.
So you have a crew, and your crew has opinions about you based on your actions. So if you bring sort of a Kaylee type and a Jane type along on a job, and you behave in a Jane type way, you know, you double cross them or something like that, your Kaylee-esque character is going to be annoyed with you. And if that keeps up, they might become disgruntled. They'll leave your crew. So maintaining a balancing act, making all of your crew happy is something that you do a lot of in the game. And it's hard to do that well. You just can't please all the people all the time, but you'll try. And if any of them is sufficiently disgruntled, they'll leave your crew and they go back into the global circulation. They become a character that other players can hire. And they have a little bit of history to go along with them. So if someone else hires your character who left you, that character has a grudge against you. And you can get a revenge job with them to go back to the original crew and rob them, do something awful to them.
That's pretty good.
As a way to appease them and gain their loyalty.
Yeah, one of my favorite examples is, you know, there are jobs you'll come across, you know, fairly often where, you know, somebody asks you to go and, you know, go and salvage a derelict on their behalf, okay? And, you know, usually these are legitimate jobs, although I think just like in Firefly, no job ever comes out quite the way you think it's going to when you start. But it's very, you know, it's not out of the question that one of the ways that this sort of revenge mission thing could come about is you might get a little, you might see one of these jobs pop up. It'll look like any other job you've ever seen. You'll take it. And the your former player's new crew is waiting for you when you get to the ship. And it's an ambush. And you know, and right now the way the game is designed, you know, it's not possible for us to have two players play that scenario live. I mean, just the scheduling challenges of making that work alone. But, you know, a player's crew could be run by our artificial intelligence routine, and they could, you know, for the purposes of that scenario, you would be fighting another player's team.
I like that.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, and we're also planning to have, just in a general sense, your ships might appear as NPC-driven, AI-driven ships in other players' games as well.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So the so there's with some of the more, you know, more recently released indie games, this is a much more common way in which players will interact in a game environment. You know, the game environment experience will feel oftentimes very much like a one-player thing, but then other players' crews actually fuel the sort of almost become NPCs for the purpose of your game session. And it's actually really cool because, you know, another player will build a much more challenging crew for you to fight than an AI is ever going to be able to do.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? You're getting us all effectively to contribute to the AI to make it more, well, less like an AI and more like a real decision-making tree.
Well, that's the idea. So that was sort of, you know, item number one was the freemium thing, and we still get that question. And even though from day one we said, no, it's not a freemium game, we still get that question all the time.
Well, that's why I know a lot of people keep saying, well, it's going to be a freemium game.
The other great misconception about Firefly Online is that it's a mobile game.
Right. Okay.
And people use that phrase. Actually, that people use that phrase a lot of the way they use the phrase freemium. In fact, oftentimes they're synonymous with each other. And the problem with that phrase is that it shows that people don't really understand what a mobile game is today. You know, I mean, mobile games 5-10 years ago, yeah, they were significantly simpler, more compromised. They couldn't do a scratch bit as good as what you could do on a desktop. That's not really true anymore. And for anybody who doesn't believe that, go play Bioshock on an iOS iPad.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty darn good, and it's pretty much no compromise. You know, these days, what you do on a mobile platform, if it feels simplistic or if the graphics look primitive, that's probably much more a function of the decisions the developer made than the actual limitations of the platform. And, you know, and I want to make it very, very clear, this game was always being developed in Unity, which is a multi-platform development environment, and there is going to be desktop versions, and we will build the best possible version we can for the desktop as we will do for mobile, and we'll take full advantage of everything that we can that those platforms offer. But to call this a mobile game is to really not understand how gaming works and with today's modern game development platforms. You know, Unity allows us to make the best possible version of this game on whatever platform it runs on.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, I've enjoyed looking at the graphics of your Cortex app, which I'm looking at on an iPad.
Pretty.
And it is a very, very pretty little toy. I have to say, I keep playing it. In fact, I've just won a Fighting Elves T-shirt. I see. I'm not saying it.
Oh, me too.
But,
congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
25. Is that 25?
That means you've been playing it a lot more than I have, mate.
Yes, you've been playing it a lot.
Well, I only got it yesterday.
Because I've only just got there.
Have you been able to explore the map of the verse?
Oh, we're thoroughly enjoying the map of the verse. That's what I mean by pretty, actually. Although, sorry, I'm going to change the subject entirely now. And it touches a little bit on the freemium thing. You know, we're a family that have never spent any money on freemium games, but those collectible cards, oh, so tempting. And I'm, you know, I was there for the first Star Wars cards, and I got the first set of Star Wars bubblegum cards.
Me too. Still got them.
Yeah, I don't know what I did with them.
You want to find those. They're worth something.
I think they're long gone, I'm afraid. But yeah, I just really enjoy, and you know, I'm so tempted to spend hard cashy money on those virtual cards. I love the fact that they, you know, they've got little moving elements like all the bits of paper in Firefly had as well. You know, it's something you could only do virtually. But I'm going
to
be strong.
Well, we can. All credit for that goes to Ben and his team. They've done a beautiful job. You know, I mean, the thing to remember is what you're talking about now is the Cortex, which is the companion app to Firefly Online. And, you know, a lot of companies, more and more game developers are doing this. It's very smart. They're building environments, companion apps for their games. Oftentimes they're now coming on with them significantly before the main game ships. Because what it does is it kind of gives players an environment where they can start having the experience of the game a little bit at a time. Firefly Online, when it comes out, there will be a flat charge for it. The Cortex is a free app.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result of being a free app, you know, we wanted to make sure that it fulfilled all the values a companion app needs to do. So it has, you know, ability for you to get up-to-date information, for you to maintain your profile, and you know, you can even do activities and earn, we call them brownie points. You can earn brownie points, which you can ultimately trade in when the game comes out for a little cashy money to help, you know, help you on your way. But what we did in the game, in the Cortex, is we added sort of another component, which we even at one point thought about shipping as a third item, and then we decided that would be too confusing. This is something you pay for. And what it is it's sort of the first part of the game that you can experience earlier. And Ben, do you want to talk a little bit about Ben and Adam? You want to talk a little bit about the Big Game Heroes package?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we like Annie was saying, we really wanted to be able to start sharing some of the features that we're developing in the game. And so what you see in the Big Game Hero package is some of that. One of the things is the map of the verse that we've talked about a little bit. And what that is basically. It feels like a little toy in the Cortex, but it's a pretty important component to the game. It's our navigation system. This is going to be how you get around the verse in the game. Now, on either end of that, in the final game, there's, you know, going to be landing on planets and jobs associated with that. But for now, it's a way to see what we're building as part of the game. But also, it's a chance to just sort of explore and look at the verse in 3D. We pretty meticulously recreated the map of the verse based on some of the previous products that QMX has created, and a number of very well-versed experts have contributed to. And so we've done our best to recreate that, and I think it's a lot of fun just to run around. We did put in a little game system to it so that, you know, it's not just all for show. There's you can earn some points towards in-game currency while you do it. You can earn some of those cards that we were talking about. So we did add that too. That's another aspect of the Big Game Hero package, is to include some little collectible cards just to give you something to do. But really, it's just a way for people who the free version of the Cortex really lets you kind of manage your account, and anybody can create an account for the game. It's free. We didn't want to limit that in any way, so that part of it is free. If you're really interested in getting sort of a sneak peek at what we're doing, you want to invest in what we're doing to help make the game better, then we've created this package, and that's just to allow people to get that deeper look and really kind of have a first look at everything that we're doing. So there's a lot of stuff in there now, and there will be at launch, but it's also a place where we're going to continue to add content as well.
There's some other exclusive items to the Big Damn Hero package as well, like developer diaries that will be exclusive, that talk about the inner workings of the game and our approach and what we're working on and what we're thinking about.
And I understand that the Miranda interview is, do I say Miranda?
Yes, you
I
did.
Don't mean Miranda.
Even.
Let me say that again. The Miranda interview is normally an exclusive. I mean, I think Nick, we've got it on the bonus show that we're doing, but
this is the plan.
But that's one of the things that you can get as a Big Damn Hero
Well, no, actually, that will not be exclusive. We're going to release that to everyone.
Yeah, actually, no. All the BDH interview videos, they're available in the free part of the app. I think we shouldn't undersell. The free part of the app actually has a ton of content in it. And, you know, that's where all the BDH interviews are going to be. That's where a lot of the concept art we're publishing, the news updates, you know, all those kinds of things, they're all there. And you don't have to pay a penny for that. Actually, I wanted to say something about the Big Damn Hero package and what sort of brought it about. Since we first announced we were doing this, we've had a number of people kind of ask us, are you going to do Kickstarter? Are you going to do Kickstarter? Are you going to do Kickstarter? Mm-hmm. And it's a very frustrating question for us to hear. And the reason why is that, of course, we would love to do Kickstarter. Who wouldn't? You know, it's like, with a property as popular as Firefly, I can only imagine how much money we could raise to make, the most amazing game ever. I mean, it would be the first game that would actually levitate your computer when you played it. But every time we looked at the question and we came back to it, you know, two things really held us up. One of it is, frankly, and while this is not our fault, we still feel like we're part of this continuum of people who have promised to do Firefly games. And I can remember, there's quite a history there, and it goes all the way back to 2005. And I remember being at the backup bash in Burbank, and the Multiverse guys were there talking about how they were going to do an MMO for Firefly. And, you know, so it's you know, Broncos have had a repeated history of being disappointed and made big promises. And the last thing in the world we wanted to do was become part of that legacy. And so, you know, as hard as it was to say no to the Kickstarter thing, we really felt like, no, what we need to do is we need to build legitimate value. And then at the point we can offer legitimate value to the fans, we can ask for a fair price for it. And so that's really what we're doing with Big Damn Heroes, is you can look at it like a Kickstarter if you want to. But the difference is that when you pay us your $5, you're going to get the map of the verse. You're going to get the collectible card game. You're going to get, and by the way the collectible card game works is if you use the map of the verse, and you can also use your brownie points, you'll get crates of loot that you can open up that will have other collectible cards in them. And when you've saved up a certain number of cards, you know, those then can be traded in for, you know, digital goods. Then the digital goods we're talking about are going to be swag and costumes and, you know, things that aren't necessarily going to affect gameplay but might make the game a little more fun for you. You know, you're going to get a custom badge that says you're a Big Damn Hero. So when people see your profile in the game, they'll know that you were one of the supporters. And then there's an entire adventure that we've built, although we haven't built it yet, but we're building, that will allow you to go to a town where there's a magistrate who's not treating his citizens very well, and if you're successful in the campaign, they will erect a statue in the town square of your avatar. And you only get that if you're a Big Damn Hero. So, you know, we're looking at it. It's like, well, you get the fully interactive map of the verse. You get the card game. You get the Big Damn Hero DLC. And all that for $5. And we looked at that and we said, well, that seems like fair value. So that really was our motivation, is that, you know, as tempting as Kickstarter is, it isn't always used responsibly. And I guess if we were working with a property that had been given the proper respect and treatment from day one, we feel differently about it. But because we feel like this is a property where the fans have already invested so much time and energy and love into it, that the first thing our first interaction with the fans, we didn't want to have our hand out.
That's a really good philosophy to have. And I'm suddenly aware, of course, that we're talking about something that we're lucky enough to be getting a bit of a sneak preview of, and the fans, hopefully, when this comes out, still won't have seen it. So I don't want to put you on the spot with scheduling, and I know all sorts of stuff in these projects can suddenly come up as delays. But ballpark-wise, when do you see the Cortex app coming out to the general public?
We actually just submitted it to Apple for review. Now there's parts of the launch process, we're not in control of.
So that could be weeks away. You know, Apple take what? About
It's the holiday season, so they might take. Normally they tell you 10 days, but because of the holidays and everything, I mean, it's possible that it'll be as late as the very beginning of January, but it shouldn't be later than that.
That is very exciting.
Mm.
Because I'm keen to pay it for real and really hand over $5 to become a Big Damn Hero. And then, after that, what do you think your release schedule for the actual Firefly Online?
Well, right now, what we said publicly is spring, and I think that's all I'm authorized to say at the moment. I will tell you, there's just a ton of work going on. We're pretty dedicated to getting it out, you know, before the summer. So I think you won't have to wait a huge amount of time before you'll get the game.
Cool.
There's a couple of acronyms that keep flying around that some people might not be familiar with. DLC, for example, which is downloadable content.
Right.
I just thought I'd throw that in there because some people are going, that's what it means. So the additional adventures and so on. Yeah.
And in the game
world, you're talking
about
somebody like me, right?
Miranda, no. I'm not an online game player. I mean, I'm familiar with it now, of course, because we've been, you know, talking about this for a while, but it's not necessarily something that, you know, if I'm talking about PCR, I know what I'm talking about. Other scientists know what I'm talking about, but someone who's not working in a molecular biology lab doesn't.
No, that is fair. Okay.
So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
I think
somebody did mention downloadable content in full the first time it was mentioned, though, and it's me.
Right, it's possibly before I actually came on. I was slightly late.
Well, I mean, I think in this context, you can think of a DLC as being the same thing as buying an adventure module for your role-playing.
Exactly.
Game.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to slightly again switch the subject a little bit. We did touch on it earlier in talking about environments, and of course we have the map of the Verse, which is your navigation system. You can see the whole map in 3D. And of course within the game itself, not the Cortex app, you can actually land on those. How detailed are the planetary environments, the towns and places that you will visit? You will have to go places to sell your stuff, buy your stuff, trade with people, collect, you know, get new crew. Can you go for a drink?
Yes, there are saloons, lots of saloons.
Can you go to Chen's Throat Emporium? Sorry, I had to ask. Chen's online. There. Miranda is here. Chen is here. Is her bar in there? Is it in the Eve Stand Up?
Ben, do you want to take that? You're building the environments.
I'm not with personally doing it. Yeah, we have a... There's quite a bit of depth, I think, to the environments. It's all 3D. You'll be moving your 3D characters through 3D environments. There are a lot of the action takes place in the exteriors, but there are interiors to buildings. You do go inside and interact with characters there. A fair amount of it, I think, if you've played a lot of role-playing games, you'll be familiar with the perspective. For right now, we're looking at more of sort of an isometric view. So it's not, we're not talking about a first-person shooter game or like a 3D adventure game where you've got the camera sort of over anybody's shoulder or anything like that. It's more of
I think some of those screenshots have been on keepflying.com.
Yes. Yeah, and absolutely. So those will give you a good idea of sort of the perspective that we want to show and some of the level of detail too. Now, some of that will vary depending on the platform you're on. Like Andy was saying about Unity, it does allow us to do multiple platforms, but you know, higher end devices, you'll see a lot more detail. And so we're building for that. We're trying to make it as rich of an experience as we can and really sort of populating the environments in a way that you would expect to see from the show. We're pulling a lot of things directly out of the show to try to use to populate our worlds with. There are also, Andy mentioned earlier, you know, there's over 200 terraformed planets and moons and hundreds of worlds on cities on each one of those. And so I'll say that we're not building each one of those cities by hand.
I would assume there's some AI to do that in most open-ended cities.
Now, that doesn't mean that we're not planning to build a persistent world. So the idea is that if you go back to a town that you visited in the past, it should be familiar as far as landmarks and things like that go. Different worlds have different climates, and you know, so you know, some worlds will be, you know, what you see in the show is a lot of prairie environments, you know, sort of things like that. But we can do a little bit more in the game environment too. So, you know, we're looking at colder environments, jungle worlds, plains, forested, just kind of as much as we can do. And like I said, it's persistent, but we're also using some procedural systems to sort of generate some things. So as far as town layouts and things like that go, it's complicated, but I think that it'll give a pretty rich experience as far as, you know, going from one environment to the other, one town to the next. We're trying to also build in a little bit more variation, too, so it's not all the small, crappy towns that we talked about earlier. It's more, you know, some of them are small, some of them are a little bit bigger, and then we've got some of the larger cities to go and visit as well. So, yeah, we want to, and actually, to be on that point, it's not all planets either. You know, we do have some of the space station environments that you can go and visit, some of the mining platforms we're planning to include, and one of the videos that we released early on was of derelict ship exploration. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yes, yes.
But,
yeah, that was really
yeah,
interesting.
Mm. There's
very bushwhacked.
Yeah.
No, that's the idea.
Yep,
now,
that was exactly
around.
The idea.
Yeah, there's gameplay around that, but just as an environment, that's something, a place that you'll be kind of running into, you know, on occasion.
Yeah, derelicts are
kind of like our
dungeons.
Hmm.
I think a way to think of the environment is the procedure engine will have rules. So, you know, towns tend to, you know, if you go to a bunch of small towns in the Midwest, they'll tend to look a little alike because there's a reason why they're put together that way. You know, the market tends to be in the center of the town and, you know, major services and things like that. And the AI engine will have those same rules that it'll follow. But what a procedure engine will do is it'll give you variability without it seeming random. And, you know, and that's really what you want. You don't want to necessarily know when you land in a new town you've never been to before that before you've stepped out of your ship, you already know the exact layout of the town.
Mm.
And you know where the boss's hideout is and things like that. And so that's sort of what a procedure engine buys us. It gives us literally hundreds of play environments that will have enough variability to keep them interesting.
Sounds really good. I can't wait to explore this.
Well, I would imagine that once this thing is all up and running, there will be people we have different classes of players. You know, we have the decorators, we have the space tourists. You know, we imagine there will be people who will just fly around and just because they want to see the verse, and we're going to try to give them something interesting to do. You know, it's what the guys were saying earlier. While you can't necessarily always escape combat, we understand that combat is a means to an end to some players, and we need. And for those who really like shootouts and the, you know, and stuff like that, then we need to make sure we satisfy them well.
Yeah,
right. We have a very broad audience of people to make happy, and we're trying our best.
And just thinking about that, and some of what makes Firefly, you know, so popular with its fans, the witty dialogue is a thing that, you know, lots of computer games struggle with because, you know, every word of dialogue has to be written. You know, we don't have procedural AIs that can be witty like Joss Whedon yet, because if we did, he'd be out of a job. what sort of game moves, game techniques have you got that give a flavor of that sort of bit of the show, that element of the show?
Well, you do have dialogue with people, and you can decide how you want to respond to them. We also have a job tool that's going to let people write their own. And we're actually hoping that has a lot to do with the end game content of the game, stuff that you'll be making for us, which is potentially unlimited. There is a dialogue system. You're interacting with job givers. You can choose to be nasty or not. It really is up to you.
So this is kind of a way of generating, you know, of producing fan-generated content, essentially.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
And for people who love writing, like, fan fiction, you are going to have a lot of fun with this tool.
Oh, boy.
Miranda, are you tempted to get involved in that?
I'm sorry, what?
is that idea of getting to create your own fan-generated content and missions for the game exciting for a non-gamer like you?
To a certain extent. I'm more about the actual, you know, the story that's planned by the creator as opposed to me adding more to it. I may be a writer, but I'm not that kind of writer.
Well, I love adding more to the verse. I do it all the time. Mm. So mm. I'm.
Well, yeah. You know.
Yeah, and so do you.
We think there are a lot of you out there who would just love to add just a little bit more to the verse.
I think there will be a lot of people that will find that inner writer actually with this sort of thing, because it's the sort of thing you can just play around with a bit and then, oh yeah, that's good. And,
right.
You know, I think that might actually encourage people to actually get further into it, you know.
Yeah. But that does bring up an interesting thing though. What about how do you police against really badly spelled missions?
Well, actually, the guys have a very cool idea of how to do that, and you don't just get to do a mission. You actually have to play the game and demonstrate that you understand it, and as you play the game and you complete missions, you actually get points that you use to actually get to write missions. Is that correct, Adam, if I got that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
So basically... Okay.
You've got to earn it.
Yeah, you've got to earn. No, you do. You just don't get to write. You just don't get to log in and start writing missions for other people.
That's interesting.
You've got to demonstrate that you're committed, that you understand how the game works. And so basically, as you achieve goals in the game, you get these points towards being able to create your own adventure.
That's interesting.
And then what happens is when an adventure is created, people rate them. There's a marketplace for these things. And so, you know, if you see an adventure up there that's got no shinies on it, you're probably not going to play it. And then that player is not going to get the benefit of having you play their adventure. Because there are benefits to getting designing a really good adventure that people like to play.
And most of that has to do with the dialogue that you've written. It's all about the story.
I could just see that when this game comes out, I'm going to have to give up my job, aren't I?
Well, that is our goal.
Yes,
worldwide economic collapse.
As many unemployed people as we can make.
Yes.
I do think it'll be cool to see what other people come up with. You know, like, I may not be able to write other stuff, but to be able to see in that environment what other people come up with is definitely something I think that would be appealing to everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I think encouraging creativity in this manner is only to be encouraged. Yeah, well, obviously, the idea.
Yeah, and experiencing it would be entirely optional as well. So if you don't like what other people are writing and you prefer to just play through the main story, you can do that too. It's entirely up to you. And you'll know that you'll be getting player-made content as you're getting.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that there's this potential for a high degree of flexibility kind of built in.
This is really good.
It just makes it sound more interesting. You want to get my hands on it.
Yeah. Well, we want it to be sustainable, and we want it to grow.
Well, obviously, I mean, if there's going to be future iterations and stuff, I mean, would fan-generated content like this be incorporated into future iterations if something becomes massively popular, for example, and becomes kind of a fixture for later versions of the game, say?
Right.
Well, I guess the marketplace is always going to be there as long as the game's sustainable.
Mm.
Just looking at some of the preview content and hearing some of the music, I've been quite impressed by that. Is there anything you can tell us about how you went about commissioning that?
We found a wonderful composer. Actually, I give the credit to Sparkplug, a composer they worked with before. He's a Hollywood guy. He probably doesn't want us telling people this, but he's worked with some of the composers who've worked on Firefly/Serenity in the past. So he understands that world. He's a huge fan, and he's a brilliant composer. And we were lucky to get him. But he's a gigantic fan, and he really, really... We've been lucky enough to get some really stellar talent. I mean, we literally are a AAA game in some respects, working on an indie budget, simply because it's Firefly, and there are people out there who want to be involved. And under normal circumstances, we would never have been able to afford them on our budget. And I think Dave Wesley, our composer, is a good example of that. I think Jeff Miller is another good example.
Yeah, definitely. Ben. Jeff is doing a lot of high-resolution models for us for the main characters in the show so that we can, you know, put the best-looking Big Damn Heroes on screen for everybody. And that's really our goal in every element of the game. And when we have talent like Jeff or like Dave come in and work on it with us, that's what they bring. They really bring their A game, and it shows. And so I'm glad you like the music, because we, every time he sends us something, we're just floored by it. He gets it. He loves it. He hits home runs for us. We love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dave was enthusiastic about talking to you guys. So.
Yeah. I'm not holding back. I want to talk to you. We've talked to you guys. That's great.
Might even play something new for you.
Yeah, he might. Oh. You know, he's always working on stuff. And I'll tell you, just FYI, we already have enough material. Just about, we're like maybe 3 minutes off from having enough material to do an OST for the game.
Oh.
So that is something I'm looking at.
So that you're considering that.
Yep. No.
Okay. There you go. There's another of those acronyms.
Original soundtrack. So it's
original soundtrack. Okay. Thank you.
Original soundtrack for Firefly. In fact, Dave thinks that by the time we're done, we'll have enough material for two original soundtracks. But we're just about there with the first one.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and you get to hear some of that in the Cortex, and of course you get to hear more of it.
I mean, I'll tell you a little story. I was playing my lunch hour at work. I was playing with the Cortex, and IT guy, who's also a Firefly fan, and I said, "Oh my God, that's really good." He said, "All you need is a guy playing the guitar in the background," and I just sort of pulled the plug out and I said, "There you go." He said, "Oh wow." So yeah, hits the spot.
Yeah. No, we have been insane. It's just been insane, the level of talent. I mean, you know, the obvious ones are people like, you know, getting Nathan and Alan and Marina and Sean and Jewel and all those folks back. You know, they have a vested interest in the franchise. I've been amazed at the number of people who stepped up who never had anything to do with the show. I mean, you know, like Dave Wesley is a good example. Jeff Miller is a very good example. Andrea Romano, our voice director, she's one of the best known people in the business.
And big time.
Yeah,
big
time.
I was actually very excited. A lot of people perhaps don't know her work, but I was very excited when I saw that she was involved with it. I thought, okay.
Do a Google search, you'll see. Pretty much all every cartoon you loved the last 30 years, this woman
pretty
is
much.
A cast director.
Yeah, no, yeah. I've been seeing her name in credits for a long, long, long time, and I've seen her on doing extras on things like Green Lantern and various other projects she's been involved with more recently. I'm looking forward to talking to her.
You know, and even in the actors, I mean, Michael Dorn's a big Firefly fan, although he still thinks Worf would kick Jane's ass. So that's, you'll hear about that.
There's a death match you'd like to see, eh?
Kelly who is absolutely born to play the part that she plays in the game.
Yeah.
You know, she.
I mean, these are names.
You know,
these are names.
Yeah, these people
seriously well-respected actors. Yeah.
Yeah, they were like, please, I want to work on this. We got to know Kelly a couple of years ago because she was promoting Arrow, and she was working at the booth, and we all got to be friends, and you know, she just kind of stuck in our head for this one particular part, and of course we went and built the part without ever asking her if she would do it, and then when we brought it to her, she was like, yeah, absolutely. And she was amazing. And we're talking about somebody who just like bang right into the role, perfect from the very first second. You know, we have been lucky on all fronts. You know, voiceover, directing. You know, Adam is way too. It's way too modest to mention this, but he's won more than one award for writing game stories. So you know, so we have our own little celebrity even within the development team.
Don't forget Tim Earle.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
That was a squee, wasn't it?
Yeah. And Tim actually has just got about another. Guys, he promises me we're getting the next ship in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Tim Earle was Serenity's original designer, and he's probably the most employed and employable concept and set designer in Hollywood at the moment. You name a genre film, he's probably worked on it. In fact, what did he tell me? He'd like went from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to the Fantastic Four, and now he's working on another big film down in. I mean, it's like that's our biggest problem getting him to work is the man's always working.
I mean, everything about this is so completely authentic. We've got the full cast. You've got the original Serenity designer. You've got so many other people that have been involved with the project and have wanted to be involved with the project. And I think this is going to be a really, really exciting change.
Well, yeah.
Firefly fandom.
I mean, you know, look, I'm not going to pretend that, you know, we're doing anything other than what we're doing. I mean, we're building a game, and it's not ultimately what everybody wants. We all want the same thing. We want our series back. And, but, you know, I will say this because it's true. You know, every time something happens in the Firefly universe and it's a success, it gets people's attention. You know, I'll put my QMX hat on for a second. You know, QMX has been making collectibles for Firefly for a very long time. In fact, between the movie and the series, we'll be 10 years next year making collectibles.
Wow. Yeah.
Been doing it since 2005. And, you know, Firefly has been very good to QMX, and that was a big part of the reason why we finally decided, look, it's very clear no one else is going to do this, so we're going to do it. We didn't necessarily start off saying, we're going to make a Firefly game. Because honestly, the prospect of it scared the crap out of us. We did it because we finally got tired of waiting for somebody else to do it, and we realized it's a thing we can do. The Firefly fans, the Browncoats, have been very good to us for a very long time, and we wanted to give them something back. And we thought this was something we could do. And so that's kind of where this whole thing started. And, you know, it's been very interesting. And when we first went to Fox to get the rights to do collectibles, you know, they were sort of mildly baffled, I think, would be the way I would put it. I mean, it was a different team at that time and so forth. And, you know, over the course of the last several years doing it, we've really exceeded everybody's expectations. And that's not us fans who are driving that. And it's really gotten the studio's attention. I would put it to you that if it hadn't been for the success of the collectibles, I don't know that we could have convinced the studio to you know, have anybody, us or anybody else, do a video game. But by the time we went to them with the idea of doing a video game, and by the way, I want to point out, this project only started at Comic-Con July 2013. So we've only been around about a year and 4 months. Some people seem to confuse this with another project that was going on before, so it's a completely different team. But when we brought that idea to them, it wasn't an if, it was a when. Mm. And so every time that there's a success in the Firefly market, it builds more success. It brings more content. You know, if a game like this does really well, who knows what that could lead to?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think even if it only does well enough to be a great game, well, we know the actors want to come back and do more. This is sort of the, in a way, it's sort of the perfect way for our big damn heroes to keep on living in the Firefly verse, because, you know, even as they get older and maybe they don't want to do that anymore, this gives them a way to do it, you know, and they can do it with, and they can continue to tell stories and they continue to connect with the fans. So we're really hoping the game is a success for no other reason than it's a platform for continuing to tell Firefly stories.
And telling the Firefly stories, of course, is something that the fans have been doing since day one, really. And we've always wanted to see more because we're not getting it from official sources, if you like, for various reasons. And so we have to do it ourselves. And that's the reason for the existence of things like QMX, for the Signal, for the fan fiction, for the boards, the comics, you name it.
Well, and I will end this interview with an open invitation. Anybody on this call or anybody on the Signal who would like to maybe, you know, on a sporadic basis do a very simple podcast about Firefly Online, that we will do whatever you need from us to make that happen. Because we would love you guys. We would love you guys, even in a very small way.
I should point out that the Signal, Miranda will be hosting a Signal, the blog of a Signal. So the Signal has all the online content that's already there is not going away. It's going to continue in that sense. The regular podcast will not pivot for lots of different reasons, but there's still quite a few of us that are interested in this. So this is not beyond the realms of possibility, but, you know, I have to say.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I will be happy to get on a call with you guys once a month and bullshit for half an hour and put that out, and at least we'll know we'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, we could do that.
So I would like to thank Adam and Andy and Ben and my colleagues Matthew and Miranda for joining us on this interview talking about Firefly Online. We look forward to the Cortex-Free app being out very shortly, hopefully, and, of course, Firefly Online sometime, hopefully, spring 2015. So, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much.